Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, rather than give class on Chaitanya Charitamrita, I was asked if I can give class on other subjects. And because we're doing a japa workshop, humility is, of course, a fundamental aspect to perfecting one's chanting of the holy name. And I also have developed about a 20-hour workshop on humility, so I can relate to you what my realizations are and what I've understood by studying. And in my study of humility, I've seen it's a multifaceted subject because it doesn't just mean one thing. So one primary aspect of humility is tolerance. Another aspect of humility is being introspective, seeing your own faults, as opposed to seeing others' faults. Another aspect of humility is becoming free from the desire to be honored, putting ourselves in positions where we could be honored and detaching ourselves from any honor that could come through service, and thus not being motivated by the desire to be honored. And another aspect, an important aspect where it manifests, where we have the most difficulty is in manifesting it, is in relationships. In dealing with the false ego in the sense of when we believe something is right, not being able to compromise, or not even being able to hear that something else may be also right, or we may also be wrong. Anyone have that experience, that trouble? That's, if you have that trouble, you are a bona fide conditioned soul. If you don't have that trouble, you are a bona fide liberated soul. Right? So humility is necessary for our own spiritual life. It's a symptom. It's both the way to become Krishna conscious, and it's also the symptom of one who becomes Krishna conscious. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that humility is the jewel of prema. And therefore, when you read our shastras, when you read Srimad Bhagavatam, when you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, you'll find devotees exhibiting what to us seems like what we might call hyper-humility. Humility that's so far beyond what we would consider normal that it's almost difficult to understand it. And then if we try to emulate it, sometimes it turns out that we can't even, if we emulate it, we just become depressed. Or we don't understand how to emulate it. If we try to say, I'm lower than a worm in stool, you'll just become depressed and discouraged, right? But they're actually feeling that way. So now it's a challenge for us to be real about our own humility and also understand this high level of humility, this level of that manifest in prema. And one of the things that's awkward but important is that we have to be objective about our own humility. And what do I mean by objective? Well, once Srila Prabhupada was giving a class and he said that we should manifest, we should see how we're manifesting the qualities of a devotee. You know, we have the list of 26, but really there's many more qualities than 26. Those are 26 predominant qualities. So if you get the 26, you'll have all the others. And you, if you read Bhagavad Gita, there's so many other qualities listed, especially in the twelfth chapter, Krishna ends. He describes these qualities, and he ends with the devotee is very dear to me who has these qualities. So then, if Prabhupada wants us to understand, to be aware that we're developing these qualities, to see, to know if we're not, would be to know if we are, right? So how could you know if you're not unless you know if you are? Am I becoming compassionate? Am I becoming truthful? Am I becoming, in this case, humble? Am I becoming detached? Am I becoming attracted to Krishna? So, naturally, the puzzle or the weirdness of analyzing my own humility creates a paradox, because if I think I'm humble, I'm not. Right? So the natural question is, how can I objectify whether I'm becoming humble? Because if I think I'm becoming humble, I must not be humble. Otherwise, why would I think I'm humble if I'm humble? Right? Because if you see the symptoms of the advanced devotees, they don't think they're humble. They think they're fallen. And that's how we know they're humble. So we have the order of Srila Prabhupada to objectify that these qualities are developing. So there has to be a way to objectify that we're becoming humble without becoming proud. There has to be, because Prabhupada's ordered us to see that we're advancing. So you have to check it. You have to check your pulse. Am I becoming humble? Let's feel it. Am I becoming detached? Yeah, it's doing good. What about false pride? Not so good. All right. So we have to check. So how do you check objectively without becoming proud? It's not easy. But let's start with tolerance. Because tolerance is very interesting. And I don't think we always understand the connection between humility and tolerance. I was discussing this topic with Burijan Prabhu, and I said, what is your understanding of the connection between humility and tolerance? He said, my understanding is that tolerance is the essence of humility. Interesting, isn't it? Tolerance is the essence. Well, think about it. Do proud people have a difficult time being tolerant? Or do humble people? Who has a more difficult time, the humble or the proud? Why? How dare you treat me that way? Don't you know who I am? Right? Because a proud person thinks they're special. And if we think we're special, I mean, we may all be special because we're sitting in this room at the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada and Radha Gokul Ananda. So that is special. But to think I am special for the wrong reason will tend to cause us sometimes to be intolerant, because we don't feel we deserve to tolerate certain dealings. Especially, we don't always feel we deserve. We should tolerate the way people treat us when they don't treat us well. And the tendency is that the more we feel we should be treated a certain way, the more we become intolerant when we're not treated that way. And you don't really see that in the Bhagavatam. You only see it amongst those who are not pure. Like we told the story last week of Durvasa. And Durvasa, he becomes easily upset. So he wasn't treated properly. So he became upset. But that's due to pride. Right? It has to be. So we expect people to deal with us in a certain way. Okay. We need self-respect. It's not, then it was Mahatma saying, well, anybody can just treat me like a doorknob and I should just be Hari Bol, you know. Just be submissive and chaste and let people walk on your head. We can't do that because that's not where we're at. It would be artificial, right? And it would create a lot of unhealthy relationships. But there is that sense in higher stages of humility that I don't really deserve to be honored. Right? I'm lower than a worm and stool. What is a worm and stool? What do they deserve? Right? Not, they don't deserve anything. So, now, If we spent the rest of the class just meditating on this verse, our brains would explode because we wouldn't understand. Okay, Prabhus, Matajis, I want you to meditate on what it's like to feel, like how, wait one minute, to get in the bhav, the mood, the attitude, the realization where you could come to this under, to come to this experience that you feel like a worm in stool. Right? Could we do that? Would we even want to do that? And if we did it, would we go crazy? Would we have to have a van full of devotees on their way to the clinic because they're now feeling like a worm in stool and they can't function in this world anymore? Right? So what the point I'm making is we have to develop humility which is real to where we are at and which is healthy. Right? If you read the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, if you read the songs of the Acharyas, they express their humility in ways that if we try to express could be very artificial, difficult, and appear similar to the psychology of people who are not mentally healthy. Such as expressing such things as, I'm very happy when I see others suffer, and I'm very miserable when I see that others are happy. I have no good qualities. There's nothing about me that's good. Could we function thinking that we have absolutely no good qualities? Could you actually function normally? Could a conditioned self? You become depressed. You might not do anything. Prabhu, can you do this? I have no good qualities. Don't ask me to do that. I'll mess it up. You would lose all self-confidence. So, humility doesn't mean a lack of self-confidence. Now, we have to understand the transcendental nature of humility as opposed to the material nature of humility. And then maybe we can start to understand what it means to be a worm in stool or what it means to think I have no good qualities and still be able to function in a productive way. It's very interesting. Krishnadas Kaviraj was the one who wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita, feeling like a worm in stool. If we feel like a worm in stool, we'll just vegetate. Right? But he feels like a worm in stool and he writes Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's the result of his feeling like a worm in stool. So obviously it's a lot different. It's not in any way a negative psychology. So we have to be careful because we can develop that negative psychology. And now I will explain how I understand the problem from the Krishna conscious point of view. And it's very interesting. When one is on the spiritual level of humility or the transcendental level of humility, it actually increases one's attachment to Krishna. It increases one's meditation on Krishna. I am so fallen. Think of the statement, I am so hungry. When you say, I am so hungry, what do you think about? Wonder what we're having for breakfast. I wonder what time Mahatma's going to end class, etc. Et you think about food. I mean, you think about your stomach, but you think more about food, right? Don't you? What's there to eat? You know, maybe I should leave the class and, you know, just get something. I'm so hungry. Right? You don't just sit there and lament, I'm hungry, I'm so hungry, I'm so depressing, I'm so hungry, I'm so hungry. The appetite, it's good, it's healthy, isn't it? If you don't have an appetite, you can't eat. So appetite, you could say, if you compare it to humility, you can say it's good to have an appetite, because with an appetite you can eat. But if you're hungry and all you're meditating on is, I'm hungry, I'm so hungry, I'm so miserable, just hungry, hungry, right? That's not what we mean by humility. But in this analogy, the hunger would be compared to someone who's humble, is thinking, I'm so bad, I'm so low, I'm so fallen. So the meditation is on how bad we are, right? Just like the meditation, I'm so hungry, I'm so hungry. You just look at your stomach, I'm so hungry, it's burning, burning. Is everybody getting hungry now? So And meditation on the food would be thinking, I'm so fallen, but I'm thinking of Krishna. Krishna, I need you. I want you. Why? Because I'm fallen from you. But when it turns into a material inebriety, when it turns into material conditioning, when it turns into the mode of ignorance, then it's, I'm so depressed, I'm so fallen, I'm so bad, I'm so... I can't do anything, and don't do anything right. It's like, I'm just so unhappy, I'm so... All these other devotees are so nice, and I'm so bad. That's called the mode of ignorance. That's not humility. I mean, that's a perversion. You can't call that humility. You just call that the mode of ignorance. So what happens if we don't manifest humility in the proper way? Then if we don't manifest it in the proper way, it causes depression. It causes lack of self-confidence. It causes an unhealthy mental state because we're trying without qualification to enter this higher state. So we have to adjust it according to our realization. And we have to understand that when Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, Krishna, I'm fallen, I have no good qualities, his meditation is on Krishna, not on how bad he is and becoming depressed by how bad he is. That's what we do, right? Because we're already starting in that state. So many of us lack self-confidence. So now if you walk around and say, Prabhu, I'm so fallen, and you already have no confidence anyway, that's double trouble, right? You're just putting salt on the wound. So if we can understand that if I say I don't have good qualities, what that should do, what it's supposed to do in a healthy state of Krishna consciousness, it's supposed to make us more dependent on Krishna. Krishna, I need you. I don't have good qualities. Help me. Help. So it's supposed to make us more Krishna conscious, but in the wrong psychology, it makes us more depressed. I'm so bad. I'm so useless. Everything I do never works out. So Prabhupada wrote me a letter and he said, you should think, I was a temple president, and he said, if you want to be Krishna conscious, you should think you don't have any qualification to run the temple and you should always pray to Krishna to give you qualification. And he said, in that way, that humility makes you always think of Krishna. Oh, Krishna, please help me. I can't do this. So now you're Krishna conscious. You're not depressed. You're just Krishna conscious. Krishna, please help me, I can't do this. As I joke in reiterating the history of ISKCON, how do we learn to cook? Said, Prabhu, it's your turn to cook. I don't know how to cook. Just go in the kitchen, pay dandavats on the floor, pay your obeisances to the pots and pans, and pray to Krishna to guide you. Good luck, Prabhu. Because, you know, we had some instruction, but most of the instruction was just depend on Krishna. So that's Krishna consciousness, because if you're asked to do a service and you don't feel capable and you then become dependent on Krishna to do that service, who are you thinking of? Thinking of Krishna. That's why humility, that's how humility brings you to Krishna. And you're thinking, I'm good at this, I can do this. Who are you thinking about now? Thinking about how great you are. And if you're thinking, I'm so fallen, I'm such a wretch, I'm a worm and stool, this and that, then you're just depressed. And that's not the way to serve Krishna. You're thinking about you, how bad you feel. That's called Maya. It's called the mode of ignorance. I'm so bad. I'm just so bad. And it's all about you. See, we're trying to get away from it's all about me, and we want to make it all about Krishna, but we're so conditioned that even in trying to become humble, it becomes all about me. Oh, I'm so humble, I'm so bad, I'm so rotten, I'm so... So what was Prabhupada's response to that? You're not so anything. You know, stop thinking about you. We want recognition for being the most fallen. If I can't be the best devotee, at least I can be recognized for being the worst. Some recognition, isn't it? So devotee came to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen. So that's how Prabhupada dealt with it. He said, you're not the most anything. Stop thinking like that. It's just false pride, false ego, right? So let's bring this now into japa. very interesting, because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was asked, or he explained, how you understand humility in relation to japa. What does that mean, lower than the straw in the street? More tolerant than a tree, wanting to offer all respects to others, not wanting any for oneself. It means many things, but he explained it in terms of helplessness, because I was saying one of the definitions of humility is Krishna, I'm not qualified. Or did I explain that? If I didn't, that's one of the definitions. Helpless. Maybe I missed that. Helplessness. That's a definition. You often find this definition. Humility means to be helpless, dependent on Krishna. Krishna can't do this. So that's exactly how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur defined humility in relation to the holy name. He said, gave this example, when you want to do something that is difficult to do, that you don't feel you're qualified to do, you ask people for help. Prabhu, can you help me do this? I'm not able to do this well. He said, in the same way, a devotee should feel, I am not capable of loving Krishna. Therefore, I should approach the holy name in a helpless state. Please help me. This task I have is so difficult. I have to learn how to love Krishna. This is so hard. Please help me. It's said before Prabhupada went to the West, he would go to Sridhar Mayapur and he would go to the house of Nandan Acharya. This is where Mahaprabhu and Nityananda first met. Nityananda was hiding here. And he would chant the holy name, crying. And Vipajaya said, why are you crying? He said, because my spiritual master has given me an order which I am not qualified to fulfill. And it's also said Prabhupada would do the same thing at Radha Damodar. He would be chanting, and someone was interviewed, and they said, sometimes we'd hear this wailing, chanting and wailing, crying. It's the same thing. Prabhupada was chanting, I'm not qualified. I have this mission. And Prabhupada said, I was begging Rupa Goswami that I'm not qualified to do this. I was begging. How am I going to do this? He said, so that humility is very real for us. And that is the humility that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur describes in relation to the holy name. I have been given this order by my spiritual master. What is the real order of the spiritual master? Is to love Krishna. Just like when Prabhupada was asked, Prabhupada, what will please you? If you love Krishna. So that's the order, to love Krishna. That's difficult. That's the highest achievement. So we don't feel qualified to achieve love of Krishna. That's humility. Krishna, please help me. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. I need help. I asked Burijan Prabhu, I said, so, what's your realization of you have to be humble to chant 24 hours a day? If you're humble, then 24 hours a day. He said, because when you're humble, then you feel exactly like this. I need help. I can't do this. I need help. So all day you're walking around. I need help. I need help. I need help. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Vaisheshika Prabhu. He distributes books, whether they take a book or not. He gives them a mantra card and he says, can you chant this mantra? Or can you chant this? And they say, what does it mean? He says, it means, I need help. So this is exactly what Prabhupada told me. Don't think you're qualified to run the temple. Think you're unqualified. Pray to Krishna to give you the qualification. So that is a very real form of humility for us. Very, very real. I'm not qualified. And if we're always in this mood, I'm not qualified, then we'll be a little more tolerant, won't we? Because we won't think ourselves so great or special. So, if you stay in the Hare Krishna movement long enough, you get promoted from private to private bhakta or bhaktin to, what's the next stage up from private? Sergeant? you get to tell another bhakta or bhaktin to do something, right? Because you've been cleaning the bathroom for 3 months, now it's your turn to train somebody else up. Okay, get in here. I'm going to show you what to do. All right. No, don't do it that way. Do it this way. Don't touch that. That's the wrong rag. No, that goes on the floor. That's the sink. Don't you have a brain? You've been here 2 weeks. Don't you know these things? Don't touch it with your left hand. You know, we've seen this. I don't know if you see this here, but we've seen this in the early days of the movement, right? You know, I asked Radhana Swami, you know, when new bhaktas join, they seem so humble, but after some time, they become proud. I said, why? Why is that? And he said, because when they first joined, they had nothing to be proud of. And then you get elevated, you know, to sergeant of bathroom cleaning. And now you can tell the new bhakta who's been here 3 days how to clean the bathroom. Now you have something to be proud of. You know? So that's the danger. If you have nothing to be proud of, okay, maybe you can remain humble. But Krishna, it's what we have to learn, and this question came up last time, we don't want to run away from any situation where there may be honor coming to us because we can't deal with it. And the other side of it is we don't want to take honor where there's opportunities like becoming sergeant of cleaning the bathroom. We don't, you know, what to speak if you get elevated to lieutenant and you have 7 people under you. Wow, now you're an important person in ISKCON, right? Then you get elevated to temple commander. You just stick around long enough, Prabhus and Matajis, you will get elevated, guaranteed, because people come and go and we always need managers. Guaranteed you'll get elevated. You'll be able to tell somebody something. And what humility means in this situation is that no matter how high I am elevated, I am always in the bhav, the mood, the attitude that I am a servant. That's very important. Because we tend to see that as a person gets elevated, they lose that consciousness and they begin to think, I am better than you because I have this position. Or I'm better than you because I've been a devotee longer than you. I was in Mayapur one day. I think it was during Yatra. There were 3,500 devotees. So I'm in the temple. I'm looking around. And this strange thought came to my mind. I was looking at the thousands of devotees. This must have been 5,000 devotees. I was looking at the 5,000 devotees in the temple. And this thought came to my mind. He said, Mahatma, you are the oldest, you are the most senior, not in years age, but in terms of joining ISKCON, you're the most senior devotee in this whole temple. I don't know why I was thinking that way, but I thought, wow, that's something to be proud of. So if Krishna gives you something to be proud of, it's dangerous because you might become proud of it, right? Yeah, and the proper way to think is Mahatma, you're the oldest devotee, and look at you. Still, you're going nowhere. These are all new devotees. They're more sincere than you. They're more Krishna conscious than you. You're the oldest devotee. You're just a wreck. You're like an old car. That's the proper way of thinking. Not, hey, I'm the oldest devotee. You know, where's the recognition? Where's the honor? So, this is a very common problem because as conditioned souls, we tend to have such a strong desire to control, such a strong desire to be right, and such a strong desire to overlord that when we get the opportunity, it's very difficult to control. Isn't it? Any of you have that experience? It's very difficult. We all like to control. So, humility then manifests on this side of the equation, that as you get position, as you go higher, you have to deal with that, you have to become more in the mood that I'm lower. I'm just a servant, I'm just helping. Sisi Radha Golok Ananda Ki Jai. Sisi Sitarama Kshayadamana Ki Jai. Sisi Gornitai Ki Jai. In 1968 or 69, which is the very beginning of the movement. So devotees were very young. Prabhupada said, hopefully by 1975, you can all become, I would like you all to become spiritual masters and have your own disciples. So that would mean, 1969, average age was probably 20. Many devotees were younger than that. So let's say the average age is 20, and the average devotee has been in the movement 1 or 2 years. And now Prabhupada's saying, in 5 years, which that means, in 5 years, which also means people will be joining subsequently, so there may be devotees only 2, 3, 4 years in the movement, still only 20, 25. And then he's saying, you should become spiritual master. Wow. How could you do that? So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said something very interesting. He said, no Vaishnava can become a spiritual master because Vaishnavas do not find fault. It's a principle of Vaishnavism that a Vaishnava doesn't find fault. Did you know that? Maybe we should put a stamp on our forehead. I'm a Vaishnava. I don't find fault. And your godbrother come with another stamp. No, you're not. You find fault. You're not a Vaishnava. No. So technically, just from the technical perspective, the textbook definition of Vaishnava is if you find fault, you're not a Vaishnava. So that's why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, Vaishnava cannot become a guru because it's a service of the guru to find faults in the disciples. That's his service. If they need to be corrected. Don't find faults just to find them. But if they need to be corrected, he will correct them. That's his service. So he said that no Vaishnava can take that service. Interesting, isn't it? But, now apply that if you're a temple commander or you're the sergeant of toilet cleaning or whatever you are, right? The same principle. Well, if you take that position and you become a fault finder, you think you're better, then you're not a Vaishnava. So, of course we know, and he said this, he said, well, if we don't become guru, the disciplic succession will not continue, so the Vaishnava has to become guru. He said, but what mentality does he have when he's guru? He said, I am the servant of my disciple. One godbrother, when he knew I became guru, he said, I said, what do you advise? He said, well, you're going to get a lot of email now. So now you become the servant of email. Right? Why do you get a lot of email? Because you have people who want guidance. So now you're becoming the servant of people who need guidance. A lot of times they have problems. So you become more of a servant. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, the guru feels like he's a servant of his disciples, and he feels that he's training his disciples to become guru. And he used to pay obeisances to his disciples. Dasosmi, I'm your servant. Amazing, huh? We get a little position, and we want to take advantage. And here, a liberated, eternally liberated soul is saying, Dasosmi, I am your servant, to his disciples. So that kind of humility is very, for us, it's practical and it's extremely important because we have the opposite mentality. And our movement will succeed more rapidly if as we go up, we feel ourselves lower. And if as we go up, we feel ourselves better, it always creates problems. And you always see this. In our culture, as you go up, you're given more respect, which is extremely good for those who are respecting, but not good for you and not good for them if you misuse it, right? It's the culture. Respect goes up. But once it's misused, it creates havoc. So as we go up, we will get more respect. And therefore, it is extremely important that as we go up in position, we also go up in humility and never feel ourselves special or above anybody. Because then we try to control and lord it over. And we won't have the mentality, dasosmi. Very important. And you see this. It's a typical problem everywhere. We should never take advantage of anyone because of our position. We should only take advantage of serving others, because now I have a bigger position, so I can do more service to help others. That's the right mentality. So then, now we have the other side of the equation. So what's the other side? As you go up from sergeant of bathroom cleaning to lieutenant of the cleaning the ashram to major general of the Sankirtan army to now you become the commander-in-chief of the temple. As you go up, just by being in the Hare Krishna movement long enough, you go up. What happens? Well, a new devotee joins, and they see you. You've been a devotee 4 years. The 19-year-old joins. If you've been a devotee 4 years, from the 19-year-old's perspective, you're like way up there, right? You're 25. You're an old man or woman already for a 19-year-old, isn't it? Because when I joined, the senior devotees were 4 years in the movement. And for us, that was like an eternity. Because the movement was only 5 years old. So 4 years was, you know, that was a long time. And I believe my temple president, he must have been about 29 years old. And to me, that was like, he was an ancient relic. From my perspective, I was 19. 29 was like, he's an adult. He's old. So there's natural respect. And he was married. When you're 19, anybody 30 years old is like an adult, right? So we had extreme respect. He was the temple president, 4 years in the movement. So as you go up, people will respect you. People will want to do something for you. They want to serve you, right? This is how it works. Now what do? People want to serve you. Wow. Some of those people who want to serve you, if you're a man, are women. It's even more trouble. What do? How do you deal with it? It is only by humility that we can deal with this, because it is our service to Krishna and our spiritual master and Prabhupada as we advance to take service from others. We go out on book distribution. We take service. We take money. Right? Don't we? If you keep that money for yourself, you get polluted by it. You give that money. Bhakti Siddhanta, when he was offered dakshina, money, he never took it. He said, go to the temple. Give it to the deity. One man offered Prabhupada money, and Prabhupada knew this money came illegally. He didn't take it. He said, go offer to the deity. He said, it's contaminated. Interesting, isn't it? He knew that the money came from an illegal source, and he wouldn't touch it. So, when we take service, we have to be able to pass that service on to Guru and Krishna, right? And people will give us money, people will give us service, and they will give us something very dangerous. They will give us honor. And if we want honor and someone gives it to us, it's a bad combination. But it's good, as we said last week, it's good for people to praise the devotee because they become purified by praising a devotee. It's part of devotional service. Prabhupada said, praising the pure devotee is more powerful than praising Krishna. It's part of the process of Krishna consciousness to praise the devotee. And we are devotees. And so sometimes people may want to praise us. And it's our service to accept that praise. But if we actually enjoy it or want it, then we will be in trouble because we won't be able to handle it. Right? Does that make sense? So we have to learn, it's incumbent upon us, we have to learn how to accept service from others. We have to learn how to accept honor from others without desiring it, so that we can offer that to Krishna. It's very important. So Now we talk about this other aspect, which Prabhupada talks in the Gita. Prabhupada says humility means not wanting to be honored, not wanting recognition. That's the definition Prabhupada gives in the Gita. And it's a very relevant definition as well for us. I render service to Krishna. Why do we serve Krishna? What is the reason? What is the motive? What is it supposed to be? What's the motive supposed to be in serving Krishna? What is it? To please Krishna. Krishna is not pleased when his devotees become proud. And it's all through our Shastra. When devotees become proud, Krishna neglects them. Or Krishna does something to bring them down. Indra, Brahma, even the gopis, that Leela. They thought, Krishna's mine, I'm special. Krishna said, okay, that's it. We're out of here. And then you see in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, they come to Mahaprabhu after they left their service in the government. And they manifest extreme humility. We're so fallen, we're so low. And Mahaprabhu says, stop it. My heart is melting. I can't take this. Humility is attractive to Krishna. It's so attractive. So if we want to please Krishna, and certainly we all want to please Krishna, he doesn't like it when we serve with pride. He doesn't like it when our motive to do the service is in some way to gratify our need to be recognized as special. Doesn't like it. Now, and you just read our books, and this you'll see this. It's everywhere in our books. How attracted Krishna is to humility, and how he doesn't like pride. And it's interesting, because if you think about it, we ourselves, in our own dealings and our own exchanges, we are attracted to devotees who are humble. And we're not attracted to devotees who are proud. It's kind of sickening to be around someone who just talks about themselves, who's just concerned about themselves. It gets, unless they're really interesting, it gets boring after a while, doesn't it? And especially if a person is manipulating things in a way to be recognized, and always trying to show off and is very insecure, always has to describe how great they are, is not even pleasing to us. But if someone's very humble, they're in a serving mood, it's very nice to be with them, and it's inspiring to be with them, isn't it? So, even we don't like it. Krishna doesn't like it. We don't like it. Krishna likes humility. We like humility. Right? So, what's important to understand, this is another kind of subtle point, maybe it's not so subtle, but it's important to understand. Now, how do we deal with this in relation to who we are as human beings? Because when we talk about humility, sometimes we're talking about things which are extremely transcendental. This kind of humility where you can be served, you can be adored, you can be honored, and it just goes right through you. That's a very elevated state. I have no desire to be served. I have no desire to be honored whatsoever. So then you can take all this service, perfectly offered to Krishna. Just goes through you and you're not affected by it. Now, as human beings, it is true that we like to be appreciated. And it's also true that if we're not appreciated, sometimes we can become discouraged. You work hard and nobody recognizes you. Nobody says thank you. I was temple president in a place. It was so difficult. We had so many problems. I practically had a nervous breakdown. It was so hard. And then I did that service and I left. And none of the leaders said, thank you for doing that. And I saw in myself how much I just wanted one little thank you. Just, you know, could you just say thank you? You know, I mean, like, just gave up 2 years of my life. I'm walking out of here. Like 20 years, I look like I had pictures of me. You know, you take a picture of a devotee before temple president and after, you know, 1 year after, he looks 12 years older, you know. So it was like the before and after, you know, I look like, wow, I really look old now. You know, I really aged in those 2 years. You know? So I was seeing how much I just wanted a little thank you. Could you just say thank you? I'd be okay. So there is a difference between that and pride. Because sometimes, for example, when a devotee does service, they don't want recognition, but they just want to know that their authority is pleased or their guru is pleased. It's not about pride. They just want to know, are you happy that I've done this? That's not pride. That's just, right? You want to know you're doing the right thing. And as human beings, sometimes we need a little thank you for doing that. I really appreciate that. So now, devotees sometimes ask the question, because Bhaktisiddhanta said, if you honor me, glorify me, you're my enemy, and if you criticize me, you're my friend. So then devotees question, not jokingly, but seriously, well, if I appreciate others, will that go to their head? Generally not, because appreciation is different than glorification. Appreciation is a recognition. Thank you for doing that. I appreciate that you did that. I appreciate that you go out every day and do this. I appreciate that you've done this service for the last 25 years. I appreciate, you know, I know the difficulties you go through. Devotees won't become proud like that. They'll become humbled by that, generally. Don't you think? They'll just go, oh, no, it's okay. But inside we feel, okay, that 25 years was worth it because somebody noticed. Right? Now, maybe if we're more advanced, it won't matter anymore. But most of us are not on that level yet. And it's not going to go to our head. What goes to our head is saying, Prabhu, you are the best. You are the best kirtanir. There's nobody better than you. I'm telling you that. And you might think, I kind of think like that also. I've been thinking that way myself, you know. It must be true, you know. That's a different thing. Now, I personally believe, from my observation, that it's a good thing that we appreciate one another. And I don't think we should think that that is going to be a problem. And I don't think it's wrong if you feel that you want appreciation, because you're just being human. Now, when you become Krishnadas Kaviraj, okay, you won't need it. You'll just be thinking, I'm a worm in stool, and worms in stool don't require appreciation. But if you're not realized yet that you're a worm in stool or lower than a blade of grass, little appreciation can go a long way. But here's the best part. If all the devotees are appreciating one another, then you don't have to desire appreciation because you'll just get it anyway. But the best part is you get to give it. And you'll even be happier giving it, right? Because that'll satisfy our need for appreciation even more when you give it. So just before I left in Mayapur, I think I told you this last week, Bhaktivedanta Purnaswami made an interesting observation. He said that, you know, we have this tendency to fault find. He said, but the problem is, if everybody fault finds, then nobody gets any better because we're only looking at everyone else's faults, right? So nothing improves, right? But if you turn it around and everybody appreciates, then everything improves. Doesn't it? Because everybody feels, you know, encouraged by appreciation. Obviously, nobody feels encouraged by faulted, unless it's out of love and it actually helps you. But if it's just out of aggression or nastiness or jealousy, who's going to be inspired? So, this topic of humility does not just deal with ourselves and our relation to Krishna. It deals with us as an organization and how we get along. And how we relate. So I personally think, and you can just take this as a seed idea, but I personally think as part of the training of anyone who comes to live here or part of the congregation, there should be a training in relationships. And it can be very philosophical, it can be based on humility and so many things. But how to interact without false ego. How to get over the need to be right, which is a huge problem. Sometimes, you know, people will just walk out of a meeting because they think somebody's so wrong and nobody's listening to me. Did that ever happen here? It can happen. And so, you know, we think, this is a spiritual organization, that shouldn't happen, but it does happen. Because we come with that nature. And a lot of us come with a nature that makes it difficult to interact with people. And we all live so closely and work so closely, we have to learn how to interact. So I think it would be a great idea to learn more about how to interact, how to listen to people you don't agree with. That's difficult, isn't it? You ever try to listen to someone who says something you totally disagree with? That's difficult. But you would think, if you're advancing in spiritual life and overcoming false ego, you should be able to do that, right? Because I'm not so attached now to what I think is right. You would think we would be advancing, but I believe we need help with that. And I think it would go a long way to learn how to better relate. It would be great for marriages, obviously. It would be great for working in management. So then I had this other idea. Maybe you could take this idea. This would be really good. We have an appreciation festival. It's very easy to organize. All you do is get everybody in one place, and then you just go around and you appreciate everybody. So you just walk up to a devotee, you appreciate them. And then that devotee can't appreciate you. He just has to take it. He can appreciate you when he comes around, but it can't be tit for tat. So that way, the devotee has to learn how to take the appreciation humbly. So you know, you have to accept it, because if I'm appreciating you and you're like, no, 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 don't say that. No, that's not good. You have to accept it. So you have an appreciation festival. You just go around and, I appreciate so much, Prabhu, you know, that you're so studious, and you know, I've noticed you ask such good questions in class and this and that, and you go to the next one. So what's that going to do to you? You have to start thinking about, you know, I never appreciated that so many devotees. What if you had 200 devotees? You have to appreciate 200 devotees. Have you ever done that before? Appreciate 200 devotees. You like, there's a lot of appreciation that would come out of you. It'd be really good, don't you think? I think it'd be great, you know, to appreciate, you know, because you have to manifest all this appreciation. Because normally we're not in that mood so much. We tend to be more in the mood of being critical. Hey, Prabhu, you know, it was 4:30 and 24 seconds when you came to Mangalarti. I noticed the clock. What's wrong with you? You never come on time. Gets me so mad. You know, sometimes we're like that, right? Yes? It upsets me so much. He's such a senior devotee. He never comes on time. What's this movement coming to? You know, so it's very easy to enter into that mode, isn't it? That's kind of where we live. So a festival of appreciation would be really good for us as individuals, because we would have to manifest a very different consciousness. And how good would it be for all the devotees to get the appreciation? You'd feel quite encouraged, because you'd realize that actually people do notice some things about me, so it's not completely useless. You know, when you're doing service and it's difficult, it's really nice if someone notices, you know, I really appreciate that. Because if they don't say it, sometimes you doubt yourself. Should I actually do this? Is it actually worth it? You know? You don't know. I mean, it may be worth it, but sometimes you don't know. Does anyone appreciate it? You know, you distribute a book and somebody writes a letter and says, I got a book and this, and now I'm chanting. How do you feel? You feel really good. It was actually, you know, all those books that people threw away, but this one made it, and now they're chanting Hare Krishna. Feel it's worth it. It's been worth going out every day. So sometimes we need that. So somebody just says, you know, I appreciate, you know, you're in the temple every morning at 3:00. That's amazing. Thank you for doing that. They have this video on YouTube. What's it called? Validation. Somebody sent it to me. It's called Validation. And it's a fiction story of a parking lot attendant, because you have to get your parking. You do that here? It's called validation. You know, you go into a store and you get it validated. So he's sitting behind a counter in the parking, what you call it, the car park, right? So sitting behind a counter in the car park, and people bring the ticket for validation. So they come in for validation, and he says, "You're great. You are fantastic. You're going places." And the person comes in, you know, they're all depressed. They walk in like this. "Can you validate my ticket? You're great. You're fantastic. You're wonderful." And he kind of says, "You think so? Oh, yeah. Oh, I can see it in you. You've got so much potential." "Really? Oh, yeah." Yeah. And then the next person comes in. "Can you validate my ticket? You're beautiful." It's like a woman, you know. "You're gorgeous." "Yeah. Really? Yeah, your eyes." And she starts going like this. "You think so? Yeah." So you actually, you know, you look at this movie, it's so funny. Because he's just taking people from depression to excitement. And you realize that's what Prabhupada did. Prabhupada said, "Go do this. You think I can do this? Yes, you can." It's just doing the same thing. You know, I mean, sometimes, you know, if you weren't here in the early days of the movement, you might scratch your head and think, how did these devotees do what they did? Because they were just young devotees. But they had somebody behind them that was validating them. So Prabhupada is not envious. When some devotee fell into Maya, he wasn't like, "Okay, forget you. You know, you're my disciple. You don't even follow me. Throw you to the dog. Throw him to the wolves. You know, let the wolves eat him up. I don't know. Prabhupada, come back. Do serve." You know, he was always, Prabhupada wasn't envious or jealous. So he could encourage because there was no enmity there. Right? So if you had an appreciation festival, just think how nice it would be. That everybody would get validated and feel, oh, somebody noticed that what I'm doing is worth it. So I think that's important. I don't think that we should think, but Prabhupada, what if I feel I need some recognition? That's not recognition that's coming from false ego. It's often just coming to know that I'm of value. So that's important in our level of bhakti. I think that's important. Don't you? I think that could... So, my philosophy is, my practice is, whenever, you know, you have the book, The 1 Minute Manager, you know that book? They say whenever you catch somebody doing something good, you say, "Good." And when they're doing something bad, you catch them, you go, say something good, you know, just to redirect them. So we can have 1 Minute appreciators. You know, when you see somebody doing something good, you can encourage. Say, "That was really good. Thank you." You know why this is important? Would you like to know why? I'll tell you why. Because sometimes we do things and we don't feel they're important. And sometimes we do things and we do them really well and we don't even know it until somebody says, "You know, you really do that well." I say, "Really? It's just like that movie. You're great." "Really?" The guy's looking, he's thinking there's somebody behind him. "You're great." Talking to me? "Yeah, you're great." My experience at ISKCON is some devotees are extremely talented in certain areas and they don't know it until someone tells them. "Do you ever think of doing this?" "No, I never did." "You know, you're really good at this? You think so?" "Oh, yeah, you are." "You didn't know that?" "No, I didn't know that." You'd be amazed how many people don't know they're good at something until somebody tells them. So you can become a catalyst by just noticing anything that someone does and just saying, "Thank you. You're really good, you know? I noticed you're really good at organizing this. Do you ever think of, like, you know, managing or, you know, starting some project? Because you're really good." Just that one thing could redirect them for the rest of their life. It's true. Sometimes this one statement to one person could change their whole life. At least it'll encourage them to continue. So I think that's important that we, whenever we find somebody doing something nice or potentially doing something nice, just acknowledge it. "Thank you for doing that." Or, "Did anyone tell you you're really good at that? That was an amazing kirtan. You should go out. You should go out to the yoga studios and do kirtan. You're really good." "Really? You think I'm that good?" "Oh yeah, people would love you." "You think they'd love me?" "Yes, they would. Why don't you do that?" Sometimes we just need somebody behind us to just push us, right? So that's more productive than Prabhu. 4:30 and 27 seconds. This is not acceptable. It really agitates me that you never come to Mangalartik on time. Right? It's not productive for me. It's not productive for the other person. So it's a lose-lose, where appreciation is win-win, because you get to appreciate, which is good for you. We do this really nice exercise. Some of you went to my forgiveness workshop. And at the end of the workshop, one of the last exercises we do is we ask devotees to pair up, and then we ask one devotee to play the part of the person you're trying to forgive. And so then you have to appreciate the person. The person who's been driving you crazy for so many years, you have to appreciate them. So it's difficult for some devotees to do that. But after they do it, I say, how do you feel? I said, I feel really good. I said, why? He said, I felt something changed in my heart when I appreciated. So it's even more important to appreciate a devotee if you have some issue or friction with them. That's the first person you should appreciate, because it alters, it changes how you feel. Appreciation actually is a very purifying process. It's amazing. Because it's such a different consciousness than fault finding. It just like shifts your consciousness just by doing it. You can try it. Of course, now today, everyone's going to find someone to appreciate, and then devotees are going to think, am I the one she hates? Mahatma said, appreciate the person you don't like. Uh-oh. Why does she have an issue with me? I didn't do anything wrong. Okay, wait to appreciate the person you hate for a few weeks so we won't have any trouble. Today, appreciate someone you like. Okay, so anyway, this is a topic of a 20-hour workshop. We're just giving some ideas here. Just some ways of thinking. Yes?